We are recording.
Anybody else see them?
Call to order.
I got one. Thanks.
All right, introduction of members and guests.
I'm James Francis. Hello, nice to be here.
I'm Peggy Bilby, Leon County Research and Development Authority.
Kim Dixon, advisor at Merrill Lynch.
Ron Miller, executive director.
I'm David Reed.
And I'm Kim Williams, in case y'all didn't know. Maybe I'm Dave Ramsey, so if you have any reports about my latency, you can blame it on me. Okay, from there we're going to public comment. Do we have any?
We have no public.
Approval of minutes from the last meeting, November 17th.
I move approval.
I'll second.
Got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Annual review of investment strategy committee charter.
The charter basically is the guiding document for this committee and how we're supposed to operate. And part of this, the charter requires that we look at it once a year and decide if we want to change it. And as well as the next item, which is the investment policy. So it's up to you how you want to handle that, but that's what we're required to do.
Okay. How about you narrate an explanation or a communication about the charter, because this is my first meeting ever to review it.
Okay, so the charter is included in the packet there. And then, mm-hmm. So basically, just the charter says, here's how it's comprised, here's what the qualifications of the members should be. We did get it changed so that we only have to meet once a year. And then, you know, what are the basic responsibilities of them? And I guess that's probably the most important part. In the past, and I wasn't here for this, but prior to me getting here, there was some consideration of hiring an investment manager. I don't know if either of you were involved in any of that. But
I think, yes.
Yeah. That was a while back.
Yeah.
Some of those meetings back, yeah.
Yeah, see, the thing is, once you get on this committee, they never let you off.
I'm so, getting that feeling.
So, at least the citizens.
As long as the citizens don't know
that. So, they looked at what we were actually doing and what we really needed and what our options were in terms of investment. When you look at the investment policy, you'll see that the opportunities to really go out on a limb and take any risk are slim and none. So, there's just a handful of things we could invest in. And what we found is that these two particular government funds, state funds, are probably the best thing for us, especially with the limited amount of money we have invested. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to have an actively managed portfolio. So, and frankly, those two government funds basically do the job for us. You know, they diversify the risk and have a particular strategy, and we just go along for the ride. And it fits within statute as well as far as what we can invest in. So so the idea of going out and hiring an investment manager, which is part of what the charter says, is to evaluate that. We just don't do that.
The cost benefit just is not there.
Yeah.
Turn a bunch of it into investment in real estate ranch before long, right? Some buildings.
Yeah, we're reinvesting, yes, in some buildings. So, and I'll get to that when we talk about the budget. So the idea today was to do those two reviews that are required, and I don't have any recommendations for any changes to the committee charter of anyone else. We made a couple of changes here recently, but I think we cleaned up some language. We fixed the once a year meeting date in November. We changed the investment policy to clarify the amount of risk we're willing to take, basically, and the priorities of investing. That's all I have on the chart.
So does anybody have any requests for changes? If not, then do we need a motion or just move on?
No.
So that's 5-6, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Investment performance.
Please. I have one minor thing on the investment policy. I hadn't noticed it before, but we are not allowed, per the policy, to invest in money market funds that hold derivatives. And I didn't have time to research it, but There are some pretty innocuous kinds of derivatives, like treasury strips.
That's the problem. That's why it's in there.
Yeah, well, I realize, but, you know, it's...
You know, it's like a credit default swap. Somebody's going to lose, somebody's going to win. How do you talk the person into losing into buying that half of the deal? I don't get it.
Arguably that's true of any trade, but...
Well, it's possible to not understand, fully understand the underlying investment and why even enter that territory if we don't need to.
Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, can you say mortgage crisis?
Yeah, but, exactly.
But nonetheless, there are some pretty innocuous derivatives, and I just wonder, clearly we're fine with the two structures we have.
Yeah.
It's just a thought that we might be getting ourselves...
I thought this language was probably taken directly
from statutes. Because, you know, the money market funds are supposed to be always have a value of at least one, and with derivatives, you can't be sure that at any one time.
And in 08, we saw a dollar break. So, you know, I know being cautious.
Yeah. So. I used to be on the hospital board, and we had a credit default swap. It was like $5 million. Challenge Bill DeVice every time he can. He brought me a book once for
explain to me how this works. Yeah.
You don't even know what you got other than somebody on the other side. One of you is making a payment every month to balance this account. Yeah. It's just the damnest thing.
Do you realize Bill's on this committee, right?
He should be.
Yeah, he's on. He just came here today.
Because I've taught him everything he knows.
And Bill, if you're listening.
I forgot that, but that this.
Where was this at that you're talking about?
It's minor, and if everybody
is something you want me to look at and see if it's in statute. I mean, I could do that.
Sure.
We'll save that for the next meeting.
Yeah, something to do. I'm sure you sit around wondering what can I do for those fine.
Exactly.
Well, there may be a day that changes.
Yeah, if you can just point out which one I'm looking at here. That's... So I think it's on. Page five and six have the list of securities or investments that are authorized.
Ah, it's page five, paragraph D.
D
at the very end.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's statute, particularly since it says that subject to limitations of section 218.4. 4, 5, 16, but I'll look. Anything else on that? So on the investment performance, you'll note that we did move during the year, we moved $530,000 out of Florida Prime and put it into SPIA. This Kim Williams, this was, we did this, SPIA changed their contract last year, and we had them come in and explain what all they were doing, but basically they're limiting how much non-state agency participants can put into that fund. And so they capped us at $3 million. It was based on where we had been for a while. The other thing they did is they changed their, they created a minimum balance that you had to maintain without giving 6 months notice of withdrawal. So we have to maintain 60% of the prior 3 month average balance, I think it is.
This is like a totally liquid investment, right?
Not SPIA, no.
That's
Florida Prime is.
Okay.
That's all short-term stuff, but SPIA is basically have a barbell strategy, so they've got what happened short term, half and long term.
Right. Most of their money are from state agencies that have trust funds. So they're basically the balance is going to be there forever, so they can invest that at a longer term.
I see.
But we used to be able to take the money in and out, and they were actually trying, what they're really trying to do is eliminate all the local governments using this, because the city and the county and...
They won't draw it all out of one time.
We would just use it like a checking account, mm-hmm. because it was so... because they pay the interest based on the overall income of that fund. And so a lot of the long-term money was making more. So anyway, they've been trying to...
And I think they did have a couple of runs on it.
If there was a run, the state would take the hit from them liquidating things early, you know, when rates ran against them. So that's what they're trying to avoid, and yeah. kind of big flows out to local governments.
So I'll talk a little bit about that when we get to the budget and where we're going to need money this year, because as you said, we are going to be investing some money in renovations of one of our buildings to the tune of about $1.8 million. So we'll have to plan for that a little bit to make sure we've got...
You see the newspaper today? The Bucky paper?
Yes.
Story? Yeah. And they had a roll of that stuff. I was surprised to see that.
So, anyway, that's something we'll have to keep in mind. I think our total capital expenditures for the year are expected to be around $2 million. So we're going to basically be spending half of this. The 60% of the, you know, 3 million is 1.8, so we'll have 1.2 we can pull without worrying about the 6-month notice, and then you've got another, you know, 900. So we would, if we couldn't give 6 months notice, we'd have enough to cover it. But we'll plan to once we get the contracts done and know what the cash flow looks like.
With that kind of a trend, I'm not sure it isn't wise to have more liquidity. I mean, or the prime is just riding the yield curve.
Yeah.
That's not going to turn around anytime soon.
No.
And those are so close.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was thinking, is that we do shift more into that. But the other thing is, you know, with SPIA, this is the game we have to play with them, is if we don't invest in it, we'll lose that ability to invest in them.
So
it's that trade-off. But I do think we ought to have at least probably $500,000 in Florida prime. Just to have that liquidity. So,
is there any new money on the horizon?
No, we spent
already.
Yeah, I'll talk about that when we get to the budget portion. But no, we did pretty much balance the budget, the operating budget for the upcoming year. But we're going to spend, you know, $2 million in capex. So otherwise, you know, it's the performance is the performance. It's you guys have been getting the monthly reports, and that's what we see is happening, is that the Florida prime obviously is doing real well. I mean, relative to the risk.
That's a huge move to be such a small number,
isn't it? Don't you love scaling?
Oh yes, that's right. I used to have a negative scale, because when we had the Fligit account on there, it would go negative. So it really, really looked good there. But anyway. So I guess that's going to be the big decision, is, you know, as we're spending the CapEx, you know, where should we, you know, where's the optimum balance for those two? And again, I think the liquidity question is always the question for me, is, you know, we don't know of anything in particular that could cause a serious demand for cash. But yeah, you just, it's the things you don't know that you gotta worry about, right? Mm-hmm.
All right. So I guess we finished our...
Any comments, questions, concerns on that, on the investment performance?
If you were ever to get in a cash crunch, I assume you have the authority to you know, go to a commercial bank, borrow real short, 6 months or whatever.
It depends on the bank and what they're willing to do, you know, for security. Because we, you know, basically all of our... I guess they could take existing leases as security, but... we really don't have any other. We typically, all we do is revenue backed bonds, mm-hmm. for other revenue backed debt issues. Mm-hmm. But that's, we are looking at some options for future.
What could you get a bond for now? What would be the interest rate?
I don't know. Last I looked, probably what, 4.5?
Really?
For maybe 2.5.
No, I was thinking
tax exempt. Is that
yeah?
Okay.
I would think.
But we'd have to have, you know, the tax exempt clients or tenants, right? Can't be the.
I don't think so because you're tax exempt, so I don't.
Yeah.
No, I think there's I ran into this in Indiana.
Arbitrage.
It's called Rev Proc 9713. And basically, if you put private sector companies into a public building, you can lose your tax exempt status.
Really? How the hell did the bond. Research and Development Authority with the charter for this one, where it encourages the sale or the lease of property to research related entities? Research
if we build a building for a private company, I don't believe we could get a tax. We could issue
on
a tax
that, on that one
on that building. Yeah. We can do a tax exempt bond on that building.
So have we got anybody in? Well, I'm sure we do. We got a couple of people in a building. Then if you did a bond, it was a long term bond, and you were subject to only be able to put nonprofits in there to continue the doing it right. I guess, and that would limit certainly you can rent space to.
Yeah, I don't know what the spread right now is between taxable and tax exempt, but it's probably not much.
No. Right, but we have eliminated, we had some bonded debt.
Yeah, we have no debt now.
We have no debt now, but I would.
That was a FAMU-occupied building.
Okay.
And that's typically what's happened in the past, is when they built buildings, they built them for FSU and or FAMU, and they had long-term leases with them, or the state, because we had, Collins was originally built for DEP and Ag, and Phipps was built for Department of Transportation. So those are tax-exempt entities that would qualify for tax-exempt debt.
You're probably right, Ron, but I would think that the statute that allows you to have a research and development authority, there may be something in there that allows you to do that. But otherwise, what?
That, I mean, that's
you know, well, it's the
federal. That's a federal. That's a federal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't want
the worst case that I would think is you would lose the tax, the non-taxable allowability. So you'd have to issue it as taxable.
Yes,
but it's going to be so close in rates.
Yeah, you can absolutely. I mean, we can absolutely issue, you know, taxable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just losing that tax exempt.
Okay.
Not nearly as.
Yeah.
Well, like I said,
I think about 4.5 rate.
Well, and that's the last time I looked a while ago. But this is a conversation I'm going to start having with a couple of folks because we are going to be looking at some projects down the road that we're going to have to finance. There's no way we can pay for it. The challenge we have is that, you know, in the past they have always had a lease in hand, you know, before they built the building. You know, FSU or FAMU could commit to occupying the building or the state. But if we're going to go do, you know, multi-tenant buildings, it could be a bit more challenging.
You know, sales tax on the rents are only subject if more than 50% of that building is rented to for-profit entities. And I may not have the language this right, but I know I got into this conversation.
Sales tax or property tax? The sales tax, if they're exempt, if the end user's exempt, they're exempt. So, like our leases with the state and the others.
FSU was putting together an incubator out in Innovation Farm, and they had an entity that was a startup that belonged to FSU professors, a couple of them, and then they needed the space and they went into it. And so I called Tom O'Neill at the University of Central Florida. He was in charge of their research commercialization, and asked him if his incubator required the payment of sales tax. And he says, yes, it does. And he says, we got in a bind. We didn't charge it originally because we were a nonprofit. We weren't paying property taxes. And then we ended up renting to people in that building that were for-profits. And as a result, the building became over 50% for-profits, and taxes were due.
That's property taxes that are impacted by that. sales tax, it just it doesn't matter either the in either
okay,
the,
so it's
the
a different,
tenant is either taxable okay. or exempt. Mm-hmm. And if the tenant is exempt, then you don't collect on it. But yes, you can get into a situation where you have a one of our buildings.
Bill Sweeney got mad with me for calling for harsh. I said, Bill, if you're going to do this, let's do it right. Let's not assume that we can just get away with it if we don't change anything.
That sounds like Bill Sweeney.
He might have just been messing with me. But he was a little forked at me. What'd you call him for? I said, because I was trying to make sure that I was leading you correctly when we talked about doing a special lease for a for-profit. But anyway,
I will look at the debt question going forward as we start looking at that. Right now, I got to figure out how to spend $1.8 billion as fast as I can and get that done. That's the pressure. I'll talk about that here in a minute, too.
Okay, moving on to financial statements.
Okay, so I could have given you the audited statements for last year, but what fun is that? The current year numbers are already old enough, but I wanted to give you kind of a sense of where we're at. These are unaudited before our GASB 68 adjustments. And if anyone here has dealt with GASB 68, I know what a pain in the rear end that is. We have to wait for the state to produce this is the FRS
pension
stuff. So it's a, I don't know, 6 or 7 page footnote out of our 12 pages of footnotes. So we won't have those numbers until December. So I'm going to go ahead and just give you the draft of what we're at right now. So you can see our cash and equivalents, which all of our investments are considered cash and cash equivalents. So there's the almost $4 million, or it is $4 million. Our accounts receivable are up in large part because of a payment we're due to receive from a certain bankruptcy. We actually have received it after the end of the year. It was the Bain bankruptcy. I think we got $43,000 of that. 65 increase is mostly related to that. So the intangibles, that has to do with some studies that we did on the Collins building for the renovation to decide what concept we were going to go with. And you can see the pension numbers didn't change because that's what's not been updated yet. Not much change in everything else there. In the statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in that position, our lease revenue is up primarily because of leasing the space in the Johnson Building. So we leased to the FAMU Department of Anthropology. It's 11,000 square feet, and it's $180,000 a year in lease payments. So they actually didn't get in there until August, so just a couple of months before the end of the year. That is why we're able to balance our budget for next year. Thank you, FSU. And then we did add a part-time person, Peggy, between 16 and 17. That's why that's up. And then the gain on the sale in the prior year was the Dan Foss property. We sold the building to them. And you can see the cash flow as well. It's just nothing earth-shattering. Yes, most of it was just the decline in operations expense. We actually budgeted a deficit of about $80,000. I'll show you that comparison to budget here in a minute. So that is the draft financials. Any questions?
And Thomas Howe Ferguson does that audit?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they're actually in the middle of it right now. They finished field work this week, I think.
Okay. Anybody have any further questions? If not, then I guess let's move on to budget review.
Okay, so the the budget is pretty much, you'll see it's pretty much what we've done in the past. We do have the additional revenue. And probably the best you kind of see there's a 2016-17 column which kind of does a comparison between forecast and budget for 16-17. And you'll see here that it's showing that we're going to beat budget. Forget about the capital expenditures because we frankly just didn't get that trail done that we were hoping to do. But if you look at net operating income, there's a positive variance of $40,000. When this was before we knew about the Bing settlement, so we actually end up about $3,300 positive compared to budget. So we really kind of came in right where we could with that amount of money. So still better, $40,000 better than what we had budgeted. So for this upcoming year, and you can see that kind of in the middle there, the proposed budget versus the current year forecast. I don't like comparing, you know, budget to budget because I want to know what we're budgeting compared to what we're actually able to perform the year before. But that last column on the right does do that comparison between the two budgets. But so you can see the additional rent income is the big number, the $155,000. The EP program is I don't know if you know about the EP program. It's our Entrepreneurial Excellence Program. EDC used to have it. Kim, were you you and Larry, and were you involved in that, bringing that here?
I found it when I was chair of the Economic
Development Council.
Damn, what
do
we call it?
The EDC. It's called EDC.
We put that out of our minds.
Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, so when the EDC folded, we picked up the program. And we received some funding, some grant funding the first year that they had passed to us to run it. Well, the funders said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. So we went after some legislative funding. We're unable to get it. So we are in the process of looking at that model and how we're funding it. And the big thing we're doing, and you'll notice...
When did we find out we didn't get that grant?
Which?
The legislative funding.
Oh, that was last year. Okay. That was last year. That was last session. So the big thing that we're doing, and you'll see the increase in authority employee expense of about $111,000. That is not for Peggy. We are actually going to hire someone. We're going to hire a director of entrepreneurship. I know the title's different than what I told you before. I'm trying to shorten it. So we are in the process of hiring that person. That's all in, but the base salary is going to be in the neighborhood of $90,000 to $100,000. But their job will be to run this EEP program. We've been contracting it out to Larry Lynch. So we were paying him $40,000 a year to do the two sessions a year. He's going to help train the new person, and and then he'll fade away. So actually retire. You know, he's been sort of retired. And I'll talk a little bit more about that on the last item I have, which is the update of our strategic plan. But that's a big part of what we're trying to get done going forward. But they're going to focus not just on EEP, but also the development of a business incubator and accelerator program. Everything else, you know, the major expense changes you see are mostly related to the increased occupancy of the Johnson Building by Anthropology, between the utilities and the, you know, maintenance and repair stuff and some of the services, which, you know, like janitorial, which is based on the square footage.
I know very little about the merits of these various programs, but it seems odd to me that you've got a program and you have no funding for it. I mean, is there that compelling a case to keep it?
Well, that's part of what we've got to look at.
If we don't want it, I'd like to talk to TCC about it because they've indicated an interest in it.
Well,
and they just in the paper today they talked about the legislative appropriations to build a entrepreneurial excellence or an entrepreneurial
an incubator.
An incubator, right?
Yeah. So it's a question of who's funding it. In this case, we're funding it. We think there's an opportunity to get other funding. But we've just not had anyone really working full-time on that, and that's part of the need to get somebody who that's part of their job is to go get funding. It's one of the challenges when you go after legislative funding, especially now where you can only go in the House, you can only go for 1 year's funding. You know, to go ask for $50,000, which is what we did, they just, you know, sort of like, you know, go away. So
too tiny.
It is. It's not. Now, if we should have asked for $500,000. Yeah. It's a much better program. But and we actually in the Senate we tried that, and then they said no, they got a match now or something. So it's like okay. We are working on that, on solving that problem. We know it's a problem. We know it's not sustainable. It's one of the few programs we have that you could actually go out and get funding for. It's mm-hmm. the kind of program you could do. Everything else we do basically is, you know, getting rent. Mm-hmm. So, but that's really part of the bigger issue, which is developing our entrepreneurship programs and our incubator accelerator programs. And so it's all going to fall into this one person to do that. One of the big criteria is their ability to raise money. So, yes, I agree. It's not sustainable.
Well, if TCC is looking at doing that anyway, is there a way to
tap
them? Well, here's the thing. Everyone is trying to do this.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a lot of stuff going on in town, and they're all doing a little bit different stuff. Okay? There's a meeting at the end of this month that the county is, or OEV is hosting, to actually talk about all of these programs and what's happened in the last 5 years and what we need to look at going forward. The other thing is, in the OEV strategic plans for 2020, when the sales tax money kicks in, there's a big section on business incubation and entrepreneurship, and so there's going to be money starting in 2020, and everyone's got their eye on the prize. You know, it's, you know what happens when there's money in the water, right? So we all know there's a lot of opportunities around entrepreneurship, incubation, acceleration. Domi Station happened. I don't know if you're familiar with Domi. It's an incubator down off Cool Gain Street. It's down mm-hmm. down the old Amtrak facility where they used to store the election equipment. And it's, which is why it's called Domi Station. Anyway, so the county had that building, and they ended up giving them, I think, $500,000 to renovate it. And then are basically leasing them the space. And it's a cool space, but it's limited in what they can do there. It's basically co-working space, which if you're not familiar, that's basically if you're a freelancer of any kind, you want a place other than Starbucks to go work with Wi-Fi and whatever, they got a desk somewhere you can sit at and be around other people like you. And then they have, you know, little offices around the perimeter that you can lease.
It's definitely a different thought process of office space than you would have ever
right? Yeah.
Or and they had the doors on rollers, and it looks like an old FRM feed store.
So. Yeah, Lewis and Whitlock designed it, and they went for, you know, urban cool, urban chic.
Trying for the Google kind
yeah. of thing. Yeah. And that's the idea, and it's not just about the space, it's about programs too. They have education programs wrapped around, you know, trying to help these companies learn. But their program is a 6-month program, okay? Don't recall how much it cost, but it's not cheap.
For the
co-starters program at Domi?
Yeah, I never ever heard of
that. Anyway, it's a 6-month-long program, so you got to commit some time. Our program is 10 sessions over about four or five weeks.
5 weeks. Two weeks. 2 nights a week, 3 hours.
And you're teaching idea people how to become businessmen, is that it? Giving them the yeah. practical skills?
And he work. Actually participates in the training.
The methodology is that you bring in professionals, lawyers and accountants and marketing people, and have them give their spiel about how their particular discipline can help them in starting up their business. Mm-hmm. And then they can become kind of somebody you could lean on, you could call if you had a question after the class kind of thing. It's not because the class is typically 12, 14 people. It's not a big class.
More networking.
It is. And so we've had 120-something. I think that number's right. Companies come through the program, maybe more.
Is that right?
It sounds right.
And when I say a company, it might be two or three people that represent one organization that's getting going. And like 90% of them are still in business that have done it in the last 5 years, which is a really big number. And considering that, we don't even have an incubator for them to go to. Right. So we have to ping them to find out if they're still out there. And some of them are, you know, still in a single person. Some of them have hired 4 or 5 people. Probably the biggest success for employment-wise is the guy that opened the restaurant over there at Collinstown.
But Bale Foods?
Yeah. And he started out packaging healthy meals appropriately sized to students and delivering them to their door. And so he'd give you maybe 5 or 7 meals for the week. You know, you'd figure out that you know, you wanted 1 meal a day or whatever that was healthy, and then the rest of the time you're going to go eat pizza or whatever. You know. and he was struggling along, and he finally decided to open his own restaurant. And damn, if he had just hit it, he's got like 86 employees. And he's now opened an operation in Gainesville as really? Well. Yeah.
What's the name of the restaurant?
Vail. And it's in the building where Madison Social is to the east of it. I think it's in the same building.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, so that other
you go in.
Well, it's the other section. It's the next building.
Yeah, you buy you know, really healthy foods in appropriate quantities, and it's really good. And the food all comes in a bowl. You basically pick a rice with 2 or 3 things on it. And but the students that come in there are, you know, looking to try to stay fit while they're still in college and not just give up to the ravages of pizza and beer.
So to keep this moving, because I know
how to do that.
Because you get him started talking about these companies. So what everyone's doing is they have a little niche. I mean, there are other places like this. There's a place called The Pod, which is kind of like for creative marketing types. Some of the same concepts as far as co-working space goes. And TCC has an entrepreneurship program now called Spark, but it's a classroom, teacher taught, whereas ours is a volunteer mentor type, you know, taught course. Theirs is a semester long. Ours is for the, you know, busy person that's actually trying to run a business. It's after hours. So there are little points of differentiation that we're trying to draw on. But for us, the big picture is going to be that incubator accelerator that works with the technology folks that are out here at the park. This is not going to be office space. This is going to be wet labs. It's going to be places where people can build things. We'll have a fab lab or a maker space where, you know, with both metalworking, woodworking, electronics, 3D printing, all that. That will be part of what we'll have. So, yeah, it sounds like we're all doing the same thing, but we're not.
Yeah.
It's
it has the opportunity to transform this area.
And but it's also confusing when you see all the different offerings. Everybody calls it an economic or a entrepreneurial program, and they're not all the same. Like PCC's. One in-house was for students to go there.
Right.
And this program is all about people from the community who are out of school. Going.
And we TCC, did that. You don't have to be vetted to get into it, right? You just have to sign up for the course, right?
Yes, but you don't have to be a student there to go to their program. But they're kind of reaching out. But
okay, the program...
We don't need to get break it down here, but we know that there's competition out there, and the big thing we have to figure out how to do is how to differentiate ourselves, and we know that, and that's part of what this person will do is how do you do that. And then we're also going to be morphing, I think, away from some of the market that we're hitting now, and more, I think, end up specializing more in more of the technology stuff. I just think that's the way it's going to end up. I think that's it. You're going to have people, some of the restaurants and stuff going to Spark, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see where all this goes. It's going to be market demand driven.
Is that your update?
That was the budget. That was the budget. If you recall the 2-hour, 22 slide presentation I did to the board on the strategic plan update, I did get it down to some tables of. There's 10 slides, but I can go really fast. I got 10 minutes.
All right, go for it.
Well, actually, you were 10 minutes late, but you know. Just
I wasn't 10 minutes late. I was more like 5 minutes late.
10.
which I deeply regret.
So, and a lot of this goes into what we've been talking about. You know, we've got the Collins building. We were looking at putting an incubator in there. We did an architectural engineering study, and it just didn't fit. So the board did approve $1.8 million for renovation. So our plan B concept is labs. We have an existing lab over there. We're going to partition it so we can get multiple companies in there, offices, and then 10,000 square feet is just going to be shell and core, so that we'll have space ready as some of these other initiatives for business attraction pay off. And if somebody needs to move in and they want to finish out space, we've got the space for them to do it. I mentioned the hiring the entrepreneurship folks, or person. As far as business attraction goes, a big part of what we're doing right now is working with OEB. Their strategic plan is really about trying to develop some of these business attraction capabilities. And also with the magnetics task force that OEV has put together, it's being led by Ricardo Schneider at Danfoss. And what they're doing is they are looking at the technologies in the park, particularly the maglab, and saying what 10 industries can we go after that fit with the technologies that's coming out of the maglab. And from that, I'm sorry, 5 industries. And from that, let's get 10 companies that we want to target, like Siemens, for example, on MRI technology. And let's develop a value proposition to go after each of those. So rather than a shotgun approach, let's be very targeted on the companies that we want to go after and see if we can't get them to, you know, make some presence here, if not manufacturing, at least, you know, an R&D component of that company to be located here at the park. So, and that's where the having space in the Collins building would be helpful. If somebody wanted to build something out there, we'd have space for them. We also have space in the Morgan building where, if it's just office kind of space, we could do something there. So that's that part of that strategy. As far as partnerships with the airport, we have started with working with CBRE and the new interim director of the airport. Because they were kind of just off doing their own thing, and I heard them at the chamber conference talk about what they're doing. I'm like, hey, wait a minute, we're over here, and there's a lot of synergy between what you're doing and what we're trying to do. Let's work together and see. For example, we have the AME building, which has wind tunnels and stuff, and if you're going after an aerospace company, they might want to know that. So they were just clueless. I hadn't even thought about it. So anyway, so we're working on that. OEV is working on doing some cluster analysis. What are the industry clusters that we have in the community? So some of the stuff we didn't even have, we knew it needed to be done, but when OEV stepped up and said they're going to do it, I said, fine, take care of that. And then developing the programs for startups we mentioned. Just some of the live workplace stuff here. We went after some grant money. The Florida Job Growth Grant Fund, I don't know if you read about that, but the governor had $85 million to spread around the state. They gave them in the last legislative session. We applied for $12 million of it. I don't think we're going to get all 12. I'd be happy if I got $200,000 to replace some signs. But anyway, it's been slow going. As a matter of fact, there was an article in the paper a couple days ago talking about how many people have applied, how many government entities had applied, and it's a big number. It's just, I think they got $500 million worth of applications or something like that. Hmm. So working on the trails, that is also in the budget. And then once we get the Collins building done, the plan is to move these offices and the few tenants that we have over into the Collins building and then look at this for renovation into some sort of food option. The beautiful view of the pond, the deck, all that. Find a private company to take that over and, you know, lease it to them, let them do the food option. And then we've got to work on some things related to development. I won't go into all of that, but our PUD and DRC and all that need to be, our CNR need to be updated again.
Lab crawl.
Yes, that's, I love that idea. We want to make that happen. I mean, wouldn't you want to come and see the labs if there's alcohol?
And you can cool drinks they can make.
That's right.
There's innovation.
Serve them in beakers.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, too, is we want to have more events out here just so that people know where it is and that we don't have swing sets out here, because we do get that call on occasion. Where are the swing sets at Innovation Park? And then the marketing side has been huge for us. And being able to add Peggy has allowed us to get someone whose full-time focus is on marketing communications, website development, search engine optimization. I mean, and so she's done a phenomenal job. I've got a list of some successes down here in a little bit. I'll show you. But so we're continuing to work on that, redoing websites and trying to get back from LCRDA and Innovation Park to really just talking about Innovation Park. The economic sustainability, the big part was B, which is leasing to Anthropology. The thing that we have to keep in mind is it's a 2-year lease with 2 1-year options. They made it pretty clear they don't intend to stay much longer than that. Whereas where they used to be in the building on West Tennessee Street, they said that 20 years ago, and stayed there for a long time. So we're hopeful, but we're not counting on them being there. So we've got a couple years to come up with some other revenue sources, and a big part of that is leasing out the space in the Collins building. We've got 10,000 square feet in Morgan, whatever we do here, and then start working on additional development. And then the last objective is this highly efficient, effective organization, and the big part was getting these two folks hired, Denise and Peggy. And then also our continued recruiting of board members. So if you guys think of anybody that might want to serve on the board, we're coming up on another appointment round in 2018. So we'll have 3 vacancies on the board to fill, I think. Depends on who re-ups. I don't know if it's Dave Ramsey, Ann Longman, and Paul Dean from Danfoss. So, and just some of the successes. Danfoss opened their application development center in June. I don't know if you guys followed any of that, but it's a 40,000 square foot addition, I think. And basically what they've added is a test facility, so they can actually hook up HVAC equipment and to fancy computer controls and change the environment and test OEM equipment and help them figure out how to adapt to changing regulations for HVAC. And then I think they try to sell them their technology while they're there. And then we have another project, which is a confidential project campus. We did execute that deal September 17th. We're just waiting for the public announcement, which hopefully is any day. Keep telling me, any day. And then the OEV engagement has been good. I don't know how much you guys follow with what OEV is doing. It's the new EDC, and it's a joint city and county agency. It reports to the intergovernmental agency, which is Blueprint. So they're still finding their legs. They have a good strategic plan. Now it's just executing and everyone waiting for the sales tax money to get here in 2020. So,
how much is that?
Sales tax committee member.
How much is all of it? It's 12% of, it's $90 million over 20 years, I think. Hmm. It's a big number.
And 12% for, it's more than 90 million. And 12% is for economic development. The rest is infrastructure.
Well, if 9 million.
The 90 million is the 12% in it. Huh? The 90 million is the 12%. And half of that goes to between two projects, I think, which is the airport and the FSU convention district.
Something like that.
So, yeah.
But there's money in it for incubation. There's money in it for entrepreneurial studies. There's money in it for wet lab support.
Maybe. Part of the challenge was is that they did this process called Imagine Tallahassee, which came up with a list of projects, and then when it came down to approving it,
it's all up to
the IA said, no, we're not going to approve the list. We'll stick with the 12%. We'll talk about the list when we get there.
Well, and it makes sense not to piece it all up because some of it may not be viable in the end anyway.
Yeah, by the time you get there, who knows? Just like we've seen with the entrepreneurship programs, who knows what's going to be
done. Every time we gave a presentation about it, it'd be 5 people in the audience. Their organization wanted to come on the board of it, to help select the projects. And it's just like, okay, this Yeah, money in the water.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And everybody had a proposal for an incubator. It's like, hey, there's 50, because they had, at one point, they had $15 million earmarked for an incubator. Oh, incubator. All right, so, you know, the Operational Excellence Program, and these are all things that kind of have helped. We have a new property manager, which has done a phenomenal job. We've had lots of community engagement. I'm doing presentations as often as I can get out there and do them.
What's the property manager doing? I'm sorry.
That's all right.
What's that?
It's the property manager. Is that, did you contract that out? Or
that's
that
through Talcor. It's okay. Still Talcor. It's just a different person.
Okay.
Who has a greater attention to detail and has done a phenomenal job upgrading spaces and tree trimming and just the finer stuff that just kind of, we're getting ready to upgrade restrooms. That's part of our CapEx, is we're going to upgrade some restrooms in two of the buildings. And it may not sound like a big deal, but when you're trying to attract somebody to fill the 10,000 square feet, you kind of need nice-looking restrooms, and these look nice.
Amen. You know, something that has always bugged me is this strip along Lake Bradford Road. As you come here, I mean, there's so much squalor along there. Gaines Street has come along so nicely. This area is so nice, and it's got so much potential, but you've got that ugly strip in there that I just think it's deterrent.
Have you seen the news recently about the Gateway Project?
No.
The Gateway District?
No. But tell me, we have something positive about
there's,
that area.
There's something in the works.
Excellent.
As a matter of fact, FSU wants to build a road. Well, FSU wants the county and city to build a road. they're putting up the right-of-way and some cash, I believe. Mm-hmm. That's going to run through the golf course from Orange Avenue, close to Lake South Lake Bradford, coming from there. It's going to have a little strip of Orange Avenue connecting from South Lake Bradford to this new road by the nursery. I don't know if you know where that is, off of Orange. And then it runs through the golf course, through the driving, splits the driving range in half at Seminole Golf Course, and then comes out, you can see, can't see it on there. Comes out past the College of Engineering and then through the old Alumni Village. Up parallels Iammonia. I don't know if you know where Iammonia is, but they've got, FSU has some warehouses over there. And then bends and connects to Stuckey. Stuckey is that last road before you get to the railroad tracks. That's not a very nice street. Mm-hmm. And so that will then, they'll beautify that and connect it all the way out to Lake Bradford. So that'll give us a really nice entrance, a nice trip from the airport. The biggest objectors right now is everyone down at Lake Bradford.
So then you only have to fix from Stuckey to the stadium.
And there, that's in there too. That's in there too. Yeah. That's in there too.
Wow, you got all those damn chain link fences and the places that look like they're falling down. It's,
so there's going to be a lot of right-of-way acquisition. They're going to have to probably take some ground over there from some folks.
And take one side of the street.
I think that's what they ought to do, too, is just take that whole side of the street. But yes, they've got a lot of work. And this is, planning for this kind of stuff takes forever to get done and get through all of the. But FSU is ready to move. They want to move quick. Because if you see the bigger picture of the map, they've got it really opens up some development opportunities for FSU that they just don't have right now. All that's landlocked over there. This just puts a nice spine road for them to build on either side of.
What's back there where the Orange Crate Factory used to be?
Orange Crate Factory?
It's on the south side of...
You hadn't called it that, I told you what the name was. It was Alberta Crate in Box. Yeah.
I have no idea where that is.
Well, it's on the south side of Lake Bradford.
It's north of the river.
Yeah.
That is a pond.
I said south. I meant east. Oh. East side. Oh, it's a holding pond.
Yeah, that's where we're created.
Okay.
It was.
I've only been there 6 years. So I'm just about done here, but these are all of predominantly Denise's accomplishments in marketing. And she just, like I said, done a tremendous job. I mean, just the 15 positive news stories in the last year alone is worth something, and they're all positive. So, and I think we've talked about most of this. And then this is the last slide, but so our priorities going forward is this new incubator development, and get the person started, get them hired and started, which, like I said, interviews start tomorrow. the Collins Building renovation, putting the trail around the Central Pond, rewriting our CNR and our Mendenhall PUD, the business attraction, which is huge because we know we've got to fill up all of our vacant space and get some quality companies in here, the public events at the park, the lab crawl, all that stuff, and then the redevelopment concept for this building. One other thing I'll mention that's happening that just hit me. We just got approved through our DRC. The Mag Lab is adding a small short stay facility off the back of the Mag Lab that will be attached with a walkway. And that way the visiting researchers will have some place to stay on football weekends. It's a 12-bed, 8-room facility. Two-story, it's a pretty much a bare-bones place to stay with desk and some common area for cooking and that kind of thing, but it will solve one of their pressing needs because they have 5,000 visitors a year, or I'm sorry, 5,000 room nights a year that they could fill, but it's like, I think, was it 1,400 visitors, something like that.
I don't think it's that many.
There's
like
600 or 700
visiting professors.
No, it's 1,400.
It's
at least 1,400.
That's a bunch. All right, you 3 run.
Hey, I got 3 minutes. No, I'm good.
Okay.
So the only thing I'll just to reiterate in terms of the investment side, as we determine our cash needs going forward with the capital expenditures and all of that. So your direction to me would be to stick with Ford Prime and maintain that liquidity.
Yeah, you're paying such a tiny premium for that liquidity, right, at least now.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys will have it.
Yeah, to the extent that and again, I don't know what kind of cash we're going to have going forward. I don't see a major influx of cash happening anytime soon. So losing the capacity with SPIA is probably not a huge deal. So, unless, I don't know, somebody dies and leaves us a bunch of money, I don't understand. By the way, it is tax deductible if you contribute.
I'll speak to my attorney.
You can contribute to state and local government and it's tax deductible. As long as the money is used for a public purpose.
Yeah, I just contributed to Ms. Malloy. My practice.
That's all I have.
All right, new business, anybody? Doubt there is any. If not, then I move that we adjourn.
Sorry.